Blog Talk Radio.
I ain't got nothing but three things to say about that.
Welcome to the Love in the Skin You're In Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Andrea Amador. I'm the author of the book Love in the Skin You're In, and I'm a curvy and confident body image expert and empowerment coach, walking the talk of body acceptance and personal power. My mission is to encourage you and give you the tools you need each week to bust out of body shame so that you can love yourself more. I'll hold a space for you here to feel and be more powerful in your life. This week, we're going to be talking about how you see yourself and what you can do to overcome any fears or insecurities around your body that might perhaps be preventing you from feeling comfortable and safe enough to sparkle. This is a live call-in show, so please call in and ask your questions. Grab something to take down the number, okay? Get ready. It's 760-888-5736. Want to know more about how to change your thoughts and see what's coming next on the show? Just visit my Facebook page at facebook.com/thejuicywoman and click on like to join the group. You can also get lots of body love and tips and more by following me on Twitter at thejuicywoman. And if you missed any of the episodes of this show, you can catch all the archived audios at blogtalkradio.com/the-juicy-woman. Also, for those of you who have asked about coaching with me, you can check out my group coaching support membership program called the Curvy and Confident Coaching Club. It runs every Tuesday from 8 to 9 p.m., and prices start at $57 a month. For more information on that and other things that are coming up, visit my Facebook page at thejuicywoman.com. This is a live call-in show, so I want to encourage you to have a conversation with my guest and I and jump in with both feet this evening and really, really participate in this program. You can either do that by asking your questions using the chat or calling in. Once again, the call-in number is 760-888-5736. Okay, so let's get rolling. Let me ask you, are you a curvy woman who's been holding yourself back from pursuing your passion because you're struggling with a bad body image? Hey, you want to know the secret of what you can do to bust out of your body-hating ways and gain the courage to really, really go after what you want? Oh, get ready. My guest this evening will be sharing her special recipe for bravery. I can't wait a minute longer. I'm so, so honored this evening to welcome Andrea White to the show. I had the opportunity to meet Andrea back in August when the two of us were attending a dance party event honoring High Voltage's self-esteem work with kids at the Yotel in New York City. Andrea struck me because the things that we talked about was so exciting and so inspiring to me that I absolutely knew that I wanted to share it with you. I was so impressed with her passion and her courage. Let me tell you a little bit about her. Andrea is a plus-size model and the reigning Ms. Exquisite Full-Figured USA and Ms. DC Plus America. Using her titles, she is presently preparing to launch a fitness campaign to encourage plus-size people to be more physically active. The Make a Big Move campaign will officially launch in January 2014 in New York, so get your sneakers ready. Andrea is a passionate and brave woman who gets her strength from her faith. She's also a minister and a Christian advice columnist. Her column, Ask Sister Faithful, has been touted as a Dear Abby for Christians. She combines her motivational speaking talents and calls upon her faith to share and spread her message of empowerment to women everywhere. Welcome, Andrea. I am so excited to have you here on the show.
Thank you. I am excited to be here.
The thing that struck me the most when the two of us met back in August was your passion. What made you decide, I'm not going to give it all away, what inspired you to leap into pageants?
Well, initially I started off just trying to get back into doing some plus-size modeling. I'd done some modeling years and years ago, and I took a long break, and I was going through so much in my life that I wanted something kind of fun and different to do as a hobby. So I started modeling again, and in the mix of all of that, one of my friends passed away who had been dealing with the effects and impact of morbid obesity throughout the majority of his life, and that kind of inspired me to want to do something to encourage other plus-size people like myself to be more physically active and take a more active role in their overall health. So the genesis of the Make a Big Move campaign was born at that time, and so I started looking for a vehicle to provide a platform for the campaign, and that's when the pageants came in. I started researching plus-size pageants, and just like straight-size beauty pageants, they all require you to have a platform or some cause that you're going to represent. And so that's how I got involved.
Wow. I want to slip back a little bit earlier because there was a time when you weren't so comfortable with your body and you were not feeling good, and it was a real leap to move into modeling, wasn't it?
Well, yes. I think, you know, I grew up, I was a plus-size kid. So, you know, I constantly dealt with the teasing and the bullying that go with kind of hand-in-hand being a plus-size kid. And so, you know, for years I had to deal with my own self-esteem and my own self-worth because I was chubby, I was always going to be seen as less than a thinner counterpart. So I was constantly in that place of giving myself that kind of self-talk, you know. And I think a lot of us deal with that. We're inside our head. We're trying to be strong, but we hear such negativity from the outside that it kind of makes it hard for us to hold on to the positive things. And so, you know, as I matured and I grew up and I started to recognize that my value as a human being has absolutely nothing to do with my external appearance. It took me a while to mature to get there. And I think we live in a society that is so focused on external appearance and people fitting into a certain mold and stamping that with approval and saying that's beautiful. And I got to a place where I said, I am going to decide how to define beauty for me, you know.
Wow.
And so, you have to get to that place. I mean, and it took, you know, for me it took years. It took me going through relationships and meeting people and recognizing that there are some people that you're going to encounter that I call them brainwashed, that they believe that you have to be a certain way to be considered attractive, and your attractiveness equates to your self-worth. And if you don't look a certain way and you don't fit into a certain mold, then you are somehow less than and you are somehow devalued. And that's a lie. That's a fallacy. And it took me having relationships with people like that and then meeting people who had these huge hearts that were just wonderful people that took you at face value, not so much physically, but just, you know, loved everybody, and that kind of provided that balance. I was like, wow, everybody's not insane. It's not, you know, everybody, you know, everyone doesn't believe that. Everyone's not like that. I had some great people in my family who were supportive of me, my parents and my sister and other family members, and I had some really good friends who just always saw the value that I had in me as a person, regardless of whether my weight was up or down this particular week or whatever was going on with me. And so, you know, that really kind of helped me. And then the loss of my friend really impacted me because I saw how his weight had really impacted his life. And by that, I remember how limited he was in the things that he could do. You know, he felt very uncomfortable going certain places because he was always concerned about his weight. And if I go somewhere and I sit down, suppose I break a chair or suppose it makes some loud noise, then I'm the center of attention and everybody's already looking at me. So I remember when we would go places together and we would go visit somebody's house, he would never sit on their furniture. If he went in their home, usually he'd just talk to people outside. If he went in their home, he would sit on the floor because he would never try to, you know, sit on their furniture for fear of breaking something. He couldn't necessarily travel, you know. He wasn't a wealthy man, so he couldn't afford to buy 2 plane tickets so that he could have room on an airplane to go places.
Right.
And so, you know, it really limited him, and he had such vibrancy. He was such a beautiful, wonderful person, so very gifted. And I felt, wow, look at how constrained his life has been just by this one thing. And so, you know, part of me kind of breaking out of my shell was recognizing that you only have this one life. You only come this way once. You want to maximize your time here, do the most that you can, do the best that you can with the time that you have available to you, and try to do as many positive things as possible while you're here.
Wow. Yes. Yeah. I'm curious, the people who showed you those wonderful examples of the unconditional love relationships, were they the same people from whom you got the foundation of your faith?
In some instances, yes, and in some instances, no. I was very fortunate to meet people from all walks of life. You know, I grew up, you know, I was born in Massachusetts, but I grew up in Southern Virginia, and so, you know, down there's not a huge cultural mix, you know. So when I had the opportunity to come to D.C., I met people from so many different walks of life, just a huge variety of people, and I learned one essential thing, that regardless of what your background was, what your country of origin, people have some basic needs that they're trying to get met, and those are the similarities that we all have. And it helped me to see beyond what a person looked like on the outside when I could encounter somebody that was dealing with the same life issues that I was dealing with. And meeting people like that and being exposed to people like that, because they're trying to survive, they're hardworking, they want a good life for their families, for their kids. I mean, these are just basic things that we can all relate to, and it has nothing to do with what you look like. So those were like those were jewels of information for me, because I realized underneath all of this superficial stuff, we're all trying to survive and live this life to the best of our ability. And I just was fortunate to encounter people from different walks of life, different faiths from my own, who just had this wonderful spirit about them, that they saw me as just another human being who was trying to survive and trying to live her life to the best of her ability, and they accepted me solely based on that. And, I mean, that's something that you can't buy. You know, you can't put a price tag on that. That's a genuine relationship.
Wow. Amen. I mean, that's just incredible, because the thing that I'm thinking is that growing up chubby, fat, whatever, myself, for such a long period of time, I felt the need to be invisible and to hide. And I believed that by being fat that I would do that. So what astounds me is the level of courage that it took for you to break out of that paradigm belief of not wanting to be seen, just like your friend, you know, not wanting to draw attention with the sound or possibly breaking furniture or anything like that. So can you point to a specific experience that left a positive impact on you enough that it made you believe that you could do it, that you could, you know, get out there and that you could model and present yourself and to help the whole, help everybody redefine the meaning of beauty?
Well, you know, there are a couple of things. One thing that really was life-changing for me, and it wasn't necessarily a positive experience, but it was a negative experience that I found something positive in. And I actually wrote an article, and it appeared in the Obesity Action Coalition's magazine, and it tells a story about how several years ago I decided I always like to do different things, try something different. And several years ago, before it became really popular, I decided I was going to take belly dancing lessons. I always loved to dance, different types of dance, and I just wanted to try something different. So I started taking belly dancing lessons, and this one particular evening I was out with a mix of people, some friends and coworkers, and I mentioned that I was taking belly dancing classes. And at this time, I was 80 pounds heavier than I am now. So when I said this, you know, you could have heard a pin drop, and then you heard a couple of muffled snickers, and nobody said anything outright, but I could just feel what they were thinking. You know how you can just sense, you know, they're struggling not to laugh, like, oh, my gosh, she's going to be what, you know? And this from people that I considered to be friends and colleagues was hurtful to me. But I got such joy from the act of dancing, and the instructors that I had were very positive in terms of different women's body types and affirming women's bodies. I don't know, as you know, belly dancing is very curvy friendly or plus friendly.
Oh,
and so the instructors did not have that. The instructors that I had did not have that mindset that you had to be rail thin to get out there and belly dance. And they welcomed me. And so I just found it was empowering. And even though I had some negativity from people who didn't understand, I still gained power from I'm doing something that's different. And I don't care what these folks think about me. I'm enjoying myself, and I'm doing something that I love to do. And that was one instance that really, it was a pivotal moment for me because it taught me the value of recognizing people who are really in your corner and people who would never think to laugh at you when you're trying something different and that may be considered outside of the box.
That's right.
So it was a life lesson for me. But it also showed me not to be a coward because there was a time in my life when I would have let that shut me down and I would have let that make me stop doing what I was doing for fear of people laughing at me and making a mockery of me. But there was just something that night, I don't know if it was anger or pride or whatever, that said, oh, no, I'm not letting that happen. I enjoy this. I'm going to keep doing it. I don't care what they think.
Wow.
So,
you know, a couple months ago on HuffPost Live, there was a discussion about the Love Your Body movement. And the question on the table was, does it work? Is it working? So let me turn it around and ask you, what do you think? Do you think that all of the media's, you know, the media is starting to change, that there's definitely more positivity, more plus positivity out there. Do you think that is effective? Is it working?
I think there are a couple of things that are happening with that. I think it's positive that we are seeing more realistic images of the female body in the media. Is that across the board? No. Is it everywhere? No. I think it's still a bit of a battle in certain sectors. But we see more than we ever have seen, and I think that is a positive thing. Whether or not it's really making an impact, I think, remains to be seen long term in relation to how our children, do we see a decrease in the incidences of bullying? Has that gone down? I don't think so, because I've still been reading articles about kids being teased and yes. beaten up because they're overweight. And they always say fat is the last acceptable form of bullying and bias, because it's almost acceptable mm-hmm. for you to tease somebody for being overweight. And nobody's going to stand up and say, you know, that's wrong, you know, as you would with another group of people. So I think that we still have a long way to go in terms of changing people's perceptions about what it means to be plus size. I read an article, it was based on a study several months ago, where they said talking negatively to people who are plus size actually has the opposite effect. You think that you being mean and saying negative things to a person who's overweight is going to encourage them to lose weight, but it actually has the opposite effect, because it tends to make them view themselves negatively, and it tends to often make them eat more. Because a lot of people, depression is tied to their eating cycle. And so it actually has opposite effects. So I think that type of data can help inform us in terms of how we can deal with people who actually have eating disorders and have their eating cycles that are kind of based on their moods, and how to deal with that and how to cope with that and how to help young people have a healthier relationship with food. Because I think that people have this perception that all plus-size people sit around all day and eat potato chips and lay on the sofa. And I'm not saying that there isn't a population of people who do that. But I don't think that that's representative of every plus-size person. The plus-size people that I know are very active in their homes, in their communities, politics. I mean, they're out there doing things and they're living their lives. They're gainfully employed. They're contributing to our society. So they're not by any means these habitual couch potatoes that we see in the media. So I think that changing the perception of people in terms of how they view plus-size people is one of the things that I really hope the campaign is able to do. That's one of the reasons for it. It's, part of it is, to get plus-size people to encourage them to become or remain more physically active. But the other part of it is to dispel the myth that all plus-size people are lazy, because that's just not true.
Yes. Yes. In the travels of the course of your speaking as Ms. Exquisite Full-Figured USA and Ms. DC Plus America, what are you finding is the general mindset that you're encountering of people towards plus-size models, towards pageant work?
You know, it depends on, and it depends on the setting. I go to some very plus-friendly, of course, if I am invited, they already know that I'm plus-sized and kind of have a plus-friendly frame of mind. But, you know, there are other places that I go where I wasn't necessarily invited, so when I show up, people are surprised to see me, like, wow, that's interesting. There's, you know, there's a plus-size lady with a crown on. Go figure. So, you know, I get kind of mixed reactions depending on where I go. And people are always interested in learning about plus-size pageantry, because I think for a lot of plus-size women, some women didn't even know it existed. So they're excited at the concept. And so I'm always well-received by women who are larger than your size 8 or 10, because, as you know, plus size in the high fashion world is a size 8 and up. And so,
what is that about?
I mean,
come on.
I know. I know. For high fashion modeling, their sizes tend to be a 0 to size 6. And plus size typically starts around a size 10. And the girls that are in a size 8, sometimes they can, you know, depending on how they're proportioned, they can slide into some of the lower, if they can fit into some of those samples, they might can do some straight size modeling, but they tend to like the girls really lean there for high fashion, and some of them can do plus size, but most of the time they're good for fit modeling. So size 10 and up tends to be the bulk of your plus size models. So,
and it would seem to me that, that would be generally the size of the plus size models that you'll see on the Lane Bryant catalog. Would that be so?
Yes.
10 to 12?
Yes,
that is not
Lane
right.
Bryant,
I'm sorry.
It's a good example. Lane Bryant is a very good example. When you look at their catalogs, those girls do not look plus size to me. They're size 10, 12, maybe 14. 10 to 14 is, kind of, I think that size range. With Ashley Stewart, they tend to include a larger size model.
Yes.
For their advertisements. But even so, you don't see what is considered the super plus model in even Ashley Stewart. And that's the girls that are really your size 24, 26 and up. So that's a very specialized category of plus size modeling. So there are divisions even within the plus size modeling realm. So girls from, say, 10 to 16 are going to get the bulk of the standard jobs, sometimes 18, depending on how they're proportioned. And, 20 to 22 can get, if they want a model that is a bit curvier.
Yes.
But, the field gets smaller as the size goes up. And so can you think of the last advertisement you saw with a size 26 model in it?
That's right. You're just not going to see that.
No, but what I learned when I first started, when I came back to modeling, like I said, I came back after going having all these experiences, and so I started learning. I traveled up to New York. I met some wonderful people, and as we were talking about this whole size differential, even within the kind of plus size category, one of the things that came up was a model is supposed to represent a standard, an ideal. An idealized standard. And so even within the plus size realm, when they did studies and they tested different size models, even plus size women tended to cater towards the smaller plus. So like the size 10, 12, 14 was more appealing to them than, say, the size 24. So that represented an ideal for them.
But there's a tremendous segment of women who are over the size 16,
yes.
The 18. They're in the 20,
definitely.
22 to 32 range.
That's right. And the thing about it is, the thing that I find interesting about this whole thing is even within our own plus-size community, we have a sense of bias, which, I think is something that all goes back to this whole kind of conversation that we're having about body image and perception. But, that bias exists, but we also have this kind of denial about how our bodies are going to look in certain garments. I'm sorry, when I was a size 24, I couldn't relate to a size 10 woman in terms of clothing.
That's right.
I'm sorry. I just couldn't. Because I knew no matter what ideal people touted, that size 10, the clothes fit her differently than they're going to fit me at a size 24.
Yeah, that's right.
And so I want to see how that's going to look on somebody like me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
So why is all of the larger plus range, why is that allocated to online shopping?
Because, again, I think it goes, I think it's a marketing thing, and everything boils down to money and what people think will sell. And so it goes back to kind of these marketing studies that have been done, and they believe, and retailers believe, that even plus-size women, even women who fall in that super plus category, find a smaller plus-size woman to be more visually appealing. They like the look of that woman in the clothing more so than they like the look of a woman who is larger and maybe more representative of their actual size.
Wow. Blows my mind. I got to tell you, I grew up with Lane Bryant, back when I was 13 years old, and it was thought of as the fat store, right? And then at some point in I went from a size 8 to a size 14. And during the time that I was 8, 10, 12, and moving into the 14, I was in that phase of resistance. Resistance and using elastic, using the pull-up pants. And I had a speaking gig to do, and I had moved into that size 14. And I tried all of the stores, H&M, and all the stores that I had stuck to when I was in the 8-10 range. And there was nothing that I could wear that fit me. And so I knew that Lane Bryant was in the same mall, and I kind of stuck my head between my put my head down and my tail between my legs, and I thought, oh, God, okay, I'm going to go back to Lane Bryant, expecting all the worst of my memories from when I was a kid. And I was so astounded. It was so great. The customer service was wonderful. I loved the music. I remember that day. There was a poster of a beautiful woman and a plus-size model. It was the very first experience that I had of a plus-size model. And up until that point, when I started speaking, as I said, I was kind of living in this very comfortable state because running a real estate business, I didn't have a lot of opportunities to be out in the public. I was in boiler rooms doing a lot of grunt work. So it was more about functionality and comfort. So I didn't have a fashionable wardrobe. So looking up at that picture of the model, she had on a beautiful outfit that had on jewelry, and it looked lovely. And that was the first time I saw myself in a different light by seeing her, because at that time I was that size. And I felt that it was so affirming to see a picture of an image of a woman who looked, she was really sharp. She was turned out. It looked great to me. And I could see that being in the same place, if I were a size 24 or 32 or whatever, I would feel exactly the same way. So I wonder why designers have this blind spot. Where are they getting this belief that women only want to see the lower range of the plus-size spectrum?
Right. Well, I don't know which women, which sample group of women they tested, and this was apparently done a while ago. I haven't seen any recent data about that. I do know that I've heard some conversations from designers, particularly designers who cater mostly to the straight sizes, who say, you know, they don't want to spend the extra money to make plus size samples. So that means this is their explanation as to why they don't have plus size models on the runway. So, you know, there are certain collections that you will never see the plus size model on the runway, but you might be able to order the plus size online. And to me, I feel like I'm not going to give you my plus size money, because the last time I checked, plus size money spend the same as skinny size money. I have nothing against skinny people, but my point being, my money is the same as their money, and it has the same value. So to me, why would I give you my hard-earned money when I'm not worth you making a sample to show me what your product is going to look like on my body or somebody has a body like mine?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're relegating me to shopping online and just guessing that this might look okay on me.
And such sour options, man, oh, man. I mean, things are getting better. They're headed in a better, improving direction, but, oh, my God.
Yes.
Like 10, 15 years
ago. It's still
ago,
a struggle.
Ugly.
Yes, okay. Yes. I mean, we have so many more options, and we have so many more plus-size designers or plus-friendly designers out there. Because, again, one thing that I encourage all plus-size women to do is to recognize your buying power. Your buying power. And when a store does not cater to you, there is absolutely nothing wrong with saying, I don't shop here, And I don't bring my child to shop here, even though she can fit in your clothes, because you mm-hmm. don't have sizes up to this. We can't shop in the same store. As a plus-size woman, you go shopping with your girlfriends that are skinny. You guys go in certain stores. You can't shop together.
That's right. That's
because,
right.
You know what I mean? So my thing is, I always said I'm going to start a revolution, and it's going to be called Because Big Girls Have Skinny Friends. So I was this is my plan. So I'm trying to get you all to join my revolution. So my plan was tell all of your skinny friends not to shop at those stores that don't carry plus sizes, because you can't shop together, and then they will see the impact that that has. Because a lot of girls who are leaner would love to shop with their girlfriends or their moms, who may be plus size, in the same store, but they can't.
That's right. That's right.
So, again, it all boils down to money. So I think that there's a huge there will be a huge benefit to my campaign. I don't know if that will be my next phase after the Make a Big Move.
Tell us more about the Make a Big Move campaign.
Well,
when is it going to be launching? What's it about? Where will you be?
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. I was fortunate enough to be able to team up with Matt at the Mr. Diva Bedick. I don't know if you know him.
I saw the two of you guys
Matt
on
Bedick.
Video the other day at a pie contest.
Yes, he is a wonderful, wonderful individual, and he started Diva Bedick. It's all about diabetes education and teaching people new ways to view diabetes, and he has all these wonderful ways to educate people, and he does so much. And I was attracted to what he does because my mom has been a diabetic for over 40 years, so we just kind of had something in common right there. And so he was willing to partner with me with the Make a Big Move campaign, because he recognized that a lot of people with diabetes are encouraged to exercise more, and a lot of them are overweight. And exercise, even if you don't lose a lot of weight, has such a positive impact on your overall health outcomes with so many diseases, that he wanted to be a part of it as well. So he joined with me, and we teamed up with Catherine Schuler to do a launch event January 4th at the Yotel. It's going to be a fit fashion dance party. So we're going to have a fitness fashion runway show, and we're going to have some get up and move segments throughout, where you can actually get up and participate and dance with us as we launch this wonderful campaign. The campaign itself is a YouTube-based campaign. People can submit videos of themselves engage in their favorite physical activity and telling us why they love it, how it impacts their overall physical and or mental health. And they submit videos online, and we're going to review the videos. We'll select a winner. The most compelling video will receive a series of prizes. So that's the encouragement piece. And we're very excited about it. I'm very excited about it and looking forward to it. So it's going to be a blast on January 4th, 2014. If you're in Manhattan, stop by the Yotel around 2 p.m. and join us.
That is so exciting. That's just amazing, because diabetes is such a game changer. You know,
yes.
I had an experience recently. My husband has been diagnosed as a diabetic probably about 2 or 3 years ago. And mm-hmm. my whole platform is love your body, make peace with food, and friends with your body. So in my life, I've gotten to the place where it's been really comfortable living around potato chips and pies and cookies and everything like that. And all of the things that I love, he doesn't love. So it works really well. But recently I was having a conversation with a friend, and I had told her Angel's A1C, it's a blood test that's given mm-hmm. to diabetics to determine their blood glucose count. And I told
right.
her, and she is a diabetic. She said, "Oh, my God, Andrea." She said, "You're sitting on a time bomb with Angel." So I realized that I needed to start re-educating myself and learning about diabetes. So I put myself into a diabetes education program, and since then I've been making lifestyle changes and doing things to help make the path easier for my husband. And in doing that, it's been such a such a huge mind-blowing change to come from this, you know, paradigm belief that, oh, you know, food, no issues, have the Cheetos and, you know, all the good stuff, and then all of a sudden, no.
Right. Well, you know, the thing, you're right, it is a game changer because it is such a huge kind of realization when you start to understand how many things have sugar in them or break down to sugar. You know, so you realize that almost everything you eat is going to impact your blood sugar on some level, and so you have to be so very cautious and think about combinations of foods and, you know, if you're diabetic and you're taking medication, when you eat and how you eat. I mean, it really can consume your life. And so one of the things that I love about Max is he has this support group for people who are living with diabetes and their families. And I had an opportunity to go a few weeks ago to one of their meetings, and I was so moved. I mean, I've been a caretaker for my mom for the majority of my life, and, you know, knowing what she's gone through and the impact that diabetes has had on her life and therefore mine, I knew my story, but hearing what other people were going through was really powerful for me. And I just felt, wow, you know, more people need to be here to hear this. More people need to get a better understanding of how much this disease can change your life.
And what you can do to prevent it.
Yeah, and what you can do to prevent it, you know, I mean.
Yes, you know. That's it.
Yes. So it's very powerful. So the work that Max is doing with Mr. Diabetic is really outstanding, and I have learned so much from him that I just totally support everything that he's doing. And so, yeah, I agree with you. It is definitely a game changer. So I love that he saw it something in the Make a Big Move campaign that we could partner together. And so we're just out there trying to encourage people, trying to let people know they're not alone. We recognize it's a struggle. It's not easy for any of us. You know, yes, you may have to make some changes, but you can survive them. And, you know, it's worthwhile in the end, I think, is really what we want people to come away with. You'll be stronger than you were before. You'll have more energy. Exercise improves your mood. You know, my thing is I want people to focus on exercise for the sake of enjoying the exercise, not with the goal of losing weight. Let losing weight be a wonderful side benefit. Mm-hmm. I want people to get out there and move because they enjoy moving, because I think you'll do it more.
Yes.
You know, if you find something that you love and you just focus on, gosh, I love to dance. I want to make it, get out at least two, three times a week and go dancing or do something, you know. Practice my moves.
Yes,
because you know?
A lot of people who are, you know, struggling with obesity issues, they're coming from a history of probably being gym rats because they have worked so hard or been in the diet, you know, mentality for such a long period of time, and they've gotten to the place where they've gotten burnt out. So they say, never again, no gym anymore.
Right.
And they kind of worship the couch, but they don't realize that by doing that, they're moving closer to their own destruction. They're, you know, the cells are going to break down, the glucose is going to, the blood sugar will spike, and their body won't be able to handle and make insulin, and it creates more and more problems, and stress compounds everything.
Oh yeah, most definitely. It is. It becomes a vicious cycle, and I think people don't want to break out of their comfort zone. And I think
it's really,
you know,
hard.
For some people, it is extremely hard. And so for some people, it won't get that way until they get to the point in their own head, and it has to be in their own head that they are tired of being complacent with whatever issues are going on in their lives, and they're willing to make that change. You know, so I always tell people, we all know, I'm a plus-size woman, I can be honest, and say we all know what we need to do to lose weight. We're savvy enough. There's enough education out there. There's enough information out there that we know the things that we need to do. I don't think it's an issue of education for most people. I think there's a psychological component that hinders most of us from getting there. And when we deal with that part of it, I think, is when you'll see a breakthrough. And so I think exercise can help with that, because exercise just it does so much for your overall mood. And once you find something that you love to do, I encourage plus-size people, don't be ashamed of the fact that you may be a little bit larger than your counterpart. Try something different. I want people to try different types of exercise so they find one that fits. Try horseback riding, swimming, try, you know, dance, try all these different types of things, different types of dance now. They have this hula hoop craze, exercise craze that's taking over, the fitness industry. People are enjoying that. I mean, whatever you like, as long as it's something that gets you moving, it's something you're going to do, be willing to do again and again, because it's about consistency.
Wow. Horseback riding, I would never, ever have thought of in a million years.
But I think a lot of
people, now that I think about it, you use your muscles.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And it gets you outside, you're breathing fresh air, you're doing, you know, and so I just want, you know, people to get out and think about different ways that they can exercise. I love to see plus-size people doing physical activities that other people don't think they can do. Show me the plus-size ballet dancer. Show me, you know,
right,
the plus-size person on a surfboard, or doing things that we don't traditionally think of plus-size people doing. But we can get out there and hang 10 with the best of them.
Oh, my God, and it makes such a beautiful statement. It gives other people permission to come out and do the same thing.
Right, right. And so that's the point of the Make a Big Move campaign. I want you to see people who look like you out there doing things that they love to do that may be non-traditional exercises, but, you know, it helps you, encourage you to break the mold and try something different. So,
what advice would you have for somebody to get started, to start changing their lifestyle, to up their game?
You know, I think, you know, kind of do a self-assessment and be honest with yourself. Know what you like and what you don't like, and know that there's some things there just is no way you're going to do, and be honest about it. You know? Because sometimes I think we set ourselves up with unrealistic goals and things that we know we absolutely hate that we would not do ever.
I love that. I love that you said that.
I mean, and it's okay, because guess what? There's such a plethora of things out there now that you have options. Like I said, suppose you know you never, ever, ever, ever swim. You just hate the water. I never swim, but guess what? Mm-hmm. There are a bunch of other things that you can do that don't involve swimming. Or in terms of food, okay, I know that yogurt is supposed to be good for me, but there's no way I am ever going to put some Greek yogurt in my mouth. It's not going to happen. Okay. I mean, okay, I get it. It's okay, but guess what? There are options for you, so you don't have to try the things that you hate, but be willing to try some other things that you maybe don't dislike as much that can still give you a health benefit. So that's what I said. Be realistic. Know what you like and don't like, and try to make small changes that don't overwhelm you.
I love that idea. I absolutely love that idea. So what do you think, in terms of body image, what advice or what recommendation do you have for a woman to the body she has and not punish herself, you know, saying, okay, I'm gonna buy this size 10 dress or gown and I'm going to kill myself until I get into it? What's your thought on that?
I think, you know, part of it, huge part of this all comes down to self-love and loving yourself enough to say, I deserve to look good no matter what size I am.
Yes.
You know, and that's one thing I always tell people. I don't care what size you are. You should want to be the best you that you can be at that moment.
Yes.
So if the best you need to buy that size 12 instead of the size 10, girl, buy the size 12. Because, you know, you are not doing anybody any good going out in that size 10, and it's hitting you in all of those places that you're ashamed of.
Not only that, but how uncomfortable it is.
Yes.
How you
yes.
can't
and you deserve to
right.
feel good. You deserve to feel good, and you deserve to be confident. Whatever it is, be confident in your size 12 or your size 14, because believe you me, you're going to look 100% better than that girl that's a size 16 and she's in a size 10 dress.
Wow. That is so,
I mean,
so true.
I mean, I'm just saying, you know, you have to be comfortable with yourself and recognize that you have an inherent value that has absolutely nothing to do with your dress size.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. And yet women continually equate their bodies and say, this is all that I am. Because I haven't reached that size 4 or whatever, I'm never going to be good enough. There's that
right.
mentality that just keeps on kicking in. And we
right.
kick ourselves in the butt.
Right. Well, I think also surround yourself with positive people.
Oh, yes.
You know, you're going to have the people in your life who are constantly belittling you because you aren't a size 8 or 6 or whatever are not
mm-hmm.
the people you need to be wasting your energy on.
That's true. So true.
They
yeah.
really aren't. I mean, those people are never going to be able to encourage you enough to get you to the place where you want to be. Because if they cared about you, if they were concerned about your health, because, you know, there may be a health issue there, I can see a family member being concerned and saying, wow, you've put on a lot of weight quickly. I'm concerned about you. What can I do to help you? Can I, you know, see, that's a place of love and a place of concern as opposed to saying, oh, gosh, you're so fat. I mean, you just make me sick. I'm tired. Why? You know, understand and begin to recognize toxic behavior and remove yourself
it's
from it.
It's true, but some people, they express their love in that way because they just do not know any better. They're just, you know, following the script from their own childhood and upbringing of the way
right.
that people have spoken to them. And what I do is I teach my clients that, you know, the way that we want to be treated, we've got to show people what we want. We're always teaching people how to treat us by what we accept.
Mm-hmm.
So if you
right.
just accept it and say, okay, well, yeah, I'm no good the way I am, say, you know, it's no longer okay for you to talk to me in this way. So we're going to change
right.
it right now.
Right, yeah. And there's no shame in changing the dialogue around you. You can do that in a lot of different ways, but it takes courage sometimes, particularly with family members. You know, it takes courage to maybe step up to your mom and say, you know, I really don't appreciate the way you talk to me. You know, I have a problem with that. It's hard to do. But I think once you have that discussion, you will feel better about you. But because that shows you how strong you are, that I didn't know how that was going to end up. It may not have ended like I wanted to, but at least I stood up for myself.
Wow, yes. And look at what you've done through it. I mean, I'm just
mm-hmm.
amazed at how you've taken the platform of helping others to become more physically active. I mean, that... The genesis of that was that hurtful comment, and look where you've taken it. You've brought it to a whole new level of fitness for a generation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping
more.
That it is something that is positive. I really hope that is something that is positive for people, and, you know, that's the whole point. You know, I'm not in this to make money or make a name for myself. I'm really just in it to just encourage other people because I know what it's like to look around and not see anybody that looks like me struggling to get up early in the morning so they can get an hour of exercise in or whatever. You know, I want that person to feel like, yeah, there are people out there who are just like me who are out there trying to be more responsible about their bodies. And they may not look like swimsuit models, in the traditional sense, but guess what? They're beautiful.
Mm.
You know, and I think that's okay. We have to redefine our standards of beauty. I think that's one thing that is evident.
What does a typical day look like in the life of a plus model?
You know, well, you know, if you have a gig, you know, a lot of models, working models, it's, I call it the ultimate hustle, because you're constantly looking for rehearsal opportunities. I shouldn't say rehearsal opportunities, but opportunities to go out and audition. So you're constantly looking for auditions and putting your best foot forward. And, you know, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of care. I think a lot of women want to model. They see plus-size modeling or any kind of modeling as glamorous, but a lot of work goes into it, you know. And you do have to invest in yourself. And so that's investing in making sure that you are presenting the best image that you can when you go for an audition. So a lot of models, they spend a lot of time doing auditions. You get a gig, you're doing photo shoots, or, you know, preparing for a runway show. It's a lot of travel. I know for me, I live in the D.C. area, so I spend my time between D.C. and New York. That's a lot of traveling for me. Going back and forth for a lot of opportunities, but there are a lot more opportunities in New York than there are in D.C. for someone like me. So, you know, you have to be willing to put that into it and really work hard at it. It's not easy by any means, and I always tell people, don't quit your day job. Plus-size models still don't get, there's a very small, select few plus-size models who are getting paid at the rate of, say, your plus-size, your straight-size supermodel. So, you know, sometimes the jobs are fewer. You know, we're dealing with, it's a smaller pool, so there are less jobs. They're very competitive. Those paid jobs are... It's very competitive, and sometimes they are few and far between. So,
wow.
Yeah.
What would you say the biggest drawback is to plus-size modeling?
I think kind of, you know, for me, it was the, you know, I went in kind of with this naive perception that, you know, it's a plus-size modeling thing, and so you don't have kind of the same issues that you have for straight-size modeling, meaning we already know that people are, you know, a little heavier than average, so, you know, you don't have the same biases and that sort of thing, and that's really not necessarily true. Some of those same biases still exist. Again, we talked a little bit about that in terms of the trend towards the smaller plus-size model. There's also a trend toward a certain shape of plus-size model. Every plus size woman does not have an hourglass figure with the small waist, curvy hip, and curvy bosom. But that's what you see pictured. If you look back and think back over a lot of the plus size models and the photo shoots and pictures that you may have seen, or at least that's my experience. And so consequently, if you don't fit into that shape, it's harder for you to get jobs. So,
true.
You know, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I
could talk to you forever. But in the minute remaining, what tips do you have for anybody who is struggling and feeling like they can't do something that they want to in life because they're overweight?
You know, I say this, find small ways to do the things that you love. And I tell people this regardless of their size. If there's something that you love to do, find small ways to do it. And I use dance as an example. Okay, you may never be, this master dancer, but you can find small ways to incorporate dance in your life. Take one small class. Get out there and do it. Do not be afraid of that. You owe it to yourself to do something you love in life.
That's right. Now, how can people get in touch with you?
Primarily on my Facebook page, I have my email address and everything there. It's Miss Exquisite Full Figured USA 2013. Search me up on Facebook, and you can definitely inbox me or send me an email based on that.
It has been such a pleasure having you as my guest. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. This has been a joy. I truly enjoyed it. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you so much, Andrea. We'll talk again soon.
Yes. Have a wonderful evening.
Okay. Good night. Thank you.
Bye. Good night. Bye-bye.